Inside Wirtschaft, der Podcast mit Manuel Koch.
Stock markets post-election day rally shows that Wall Street comes out of the election stronger. This is the IG Trading Talk and I'm Manuel Koch. And joining me now are Salah Edine Boumidi, head of markets at IG, and the legendary Peter Tuckman, the Einstein of Wall Street, over 35 years on the floor of the New York Stock Exchange. Guys, so good to see you.
Good to see you, Manuel.
Thank you, Manuel.
Peter, what do you think? Wall Street didn't pull back. It's going up more or less. Is it coming out of the election stronger than we all maybe thought before?
You know, the markets really never disappoint, as far as for people like us who love to analyze it and the love excitement and volatility, right? There was nothing boring about the election and post-election market movements, right? It's fascinating to know that the week prior, we'd had a 6.5% sell-off, right? We haven't spoken since that. And I kind of believe that was sort of, you know, everybody is analyzing it over and over and over again. You know, it seemed to me it was led by the NASDAQ, and it seemed to me more of a rotation, posturing yourself coming into the election, obviously not knowing what was going to happen. We have had one of the closest races, whether you believe in the polls or not. It's clear that half of the United States favors Mr. Trump and the other half favors Mr. Biden, and what will happen, we'll see. But one thing I will bring up, though, is that the rally post-election can also be analyzed in so many different ways. First of all, you know, we discussed on our Election Day show, and you kept asking me the same question over and over, which was so exciting, which was, what will the market do post-election and will it continue to go up? And I answered it four times one way. And then by the end, I did change my posture after I spoke to my son. And I said, you know what, Manuel, the market doesn't like anxiety and unknowns. So no matter who wins, I believe the market will go up 1,000. And in fact, it did. I don't like to blow my own horn, but it was actually a good call. I give the credit to my son. So I believe there's a number of reasons that you see the rally in the market post-election with still everything out on the table. I think the anxiety around the election was insurmountable, right? What's going to, you know, let's talk for a moment about what I always say is that politics and markets really don't have that much effect on the market historically, right? So at the end of the day, this one did more than usual, but at the end of the day, it's clear that the reason that the anxiety around what was going to happen, or it's kind of like all that excitement, emotion that leads up to Christmas, right? The kids are excited. You're buying presents, sending money. It's wild and crazy. Then Christmas happens, and then there's that post-Christmas emotional pause and exhaustion, and you're just looking at everyone in the family. You opened your presents up, and you just sigh a bit of relief going, you know what? What a great holiday. I love you all, but I'm glad it's over. And I think that's what the market did in a certain way. You know what? I loved all the excitement and the volatility, but I'm glad it's over. And net net, markets tend to go positive. They go from bottom left to upper right. And I think that's what we saw. I will get a little long-winded in the answer because I think it's important to know two things. Right. We have an election, a Dem against a Republican, but we also have in the U.S. the House of Representatives and the Senate. Right. So people's fear of a Democratic elected president is historically that they are anti-Wall Street, that they are pro-tax raising and pro-regulatory messages on the banks. Well, what's going to happen no matter who wins this presidency is it appears that the Senate may not go Democratic. It may not be a complete sweep. So net net, whatever happens, the bottom line is if Mr. Biden were to win the presidency, he's not going to dislocate any kind of a market rally or any kind of a recovery in the economy, no matter what, for a year or two, right? If that happens to be the scenario that happens, the first thing he's not going to do is not raise taxes and get regulations on banks. That would be completely counterindicative to any kind of an empowerment of the United States economy, which we need. His first thing is going to be stimulus, and controlling the virus, right? So you know what? I think all of these things are contributing factors into the complete sigh of relief and market rally that we've seen for 2 days more of 1,000 points virtually. You know, you did see that midday, both days that we watched post-election, which was the largest post-election rally since 1928, right, did have a little bit of a pullback by the end of the day. So net-net, markets seem like they don't mind who's going to win. They're just happy the election is over.
Yeah, Peter, this is a good point, because I told you before, for me, it doesn't matter who will win, because the markets have so many factors that can push actually the markets higher. But my sentiment is on the other side, technically telling me something different. One point, volatility is still high, and we are getting, so we have increased volatility levels since Corona, since the outbreak of Corona. We are not getting down of it. We still, which is a key indicator for me, the 50 daily moving average. If we are trending above this moving average, we have actually high risk involved in the market. So is there any, my feeling is saying like, there should be a point where this huge volatility should drag the markets down, not as a huge correction. But so for me, there is still the probability to get a W formation. So there is not everything gone. I mean, fundamentally, there are positive effects. Just technically speaking, if you look on the NASDAQ 100, and just draw a trend line from September till now, we are reaching 12,000 points again, but we're retesting and we're rejecting probably right now. We are on a really margin, on a border that is really important, but we are getting lower lows since September. So it's a really, indifferent story right now for me, just in a short-term perspective.
You know what, I appreciate that. It's a fascinating analysis of what's going on. We you know, the test of the 12,000 level in NASDAQ is curious, right? I mean, it makes sense, right? In a normal world, it makes sense. And I kind of agree with you technically that, you know, there are many moving parts. Not all of them are going as we would predict them to be. There are so many wild cards still out there, right? And my gut is that, you know, I kind of think, well, look, we've seen the volatility, and I also believe that this volatility should poise us for a pullback, no matter who wins the presidency. However, we just haven't seen that. We saw it for 1 week, which felt more rotational than not. I believe it was a NASDAQ-led sell-off last week, right? And so, yes, that was a example of the pullback you are discussing. But then again, this week with the election, NASDAQ went back to being the catalyst that took the market higher. And we saw that NASDAQ was one of the biggest factors to take the market higher after Corona. So how, you know, NASDAQ and tech sector are poised to still find some benefit within the Corona environment. Right. And as we say, you know, we don't have a crystal ball. We've got technical analysis and our experience. Those are the two things we are reaching towards. And I'm wondering, you know, we've seen it over and over again, that sometimes we reach for the crystal ball, we reach for our experience. And then yet you and I and Manuel, who have a lot of experience in this, get thrown a curveball every once in a while. Right. And I think that's where we are at the moment. You know, for everybody who's buying it, there's somebody who's selling it. NASDAQ has been in a mind of its own in so many ways. The economic recovery is still, I believe, W makes sense to me, you know, just because we're going to see a push and a pull, kind of like somebody driving your old uncle who used to drive with his foot on the brake and the gas at the same time. And when you used to go, you know, to holiday dinners, it drove you crazy because you kept going back and forth. That's what the market feels like it's going to do. you know, and it's just, it never disappoints, and it's fascinating. And I love the fact that we get on a weekly basis to try and analyze.
Peter, we saw last Friday that there were 640,000 new jobs added in the US. The unemployment rate dropped to 6.9%. At the same time, corona numbers are on record highs. Is the worst yet to come?
To be perfectly honest, yes, I believe so. I am in New York now, and I went down to the floor of the stock exchange, as you guys know, and I've been driving around Manhattan, New York City. I live on the Upper West Side, and New York is a fascinating template for what's going on. And what I saw was that the line, you know, in New York City right now, there's maybe one restaurant, two restaurants open here or there, right? We've made an attempt to reopen, and so far it's been okay, but it is outside dining with social distancing. But what I noticed is we have urgent care and city MDs, which are these splinter urgent care areas on almost every block here in Manhattan. And the lines were out the door for a number of days. As I drove downtown, I thought these people were waiting to vote. And then when I finally traced the line all the way around, I noticed they were waiting online to see a doctor. So that for me tells me that we are once again spiking up and the worst is yet to come. We're seeing states here in the United States that are shutting themselves off from other states. So, you know, while we're still in the middle of an election, and while we had 120+ thousand new cases a day in the United States, you know, the recovery will be what it'll be. And of course, there's nothing more, I hope. And the jobs numbers, may it go to even money and go higher and higher and higher, right? It turns out that one of the numbers that I thought, which was gave me some sense of happiness, was that we've taken back almost half the jobs that we lost in the initial state of the pandemic. However, I just don't understand it. When you got to look from where we came from. We had a robust economy with really low unemployment at the 2% level or so before the pandemic. We lost 40 million jobs, right, as we closed down and went shelter in place. We have each month done a reasonable job about seeing the numbers grow on the employment side, but I can't really understand where those jobs are coming from. Are the farmers going back to work? Are people in the hospitality industry going back to work? Are restaurants reopening? Who is actually going back to work? I can't figure that out, and nobody seems to give me some clarity. Right now, it's a numbers game, right? Are companies that do see somewhat of a future starting to rehire people in the event that the economy opens up again? That's very possible. But with a virus that is spiking 130,000 cases a day, Europe in total lockdown, US coming towards a lockdown, as states close themselves off from other states trying to prevent a spread, you know, there's nothing more that I would love than to see a robust economy and recovery, and to see everybody back at work, and to see the Congress give a lifeline to people who are struggling. You know, I want to get my life back. I want everybody to have a glimmer in their eye of hope going forward. It's just hard to understand for me. And maybe these numbers are real, and all power to them. I can't figure out where they're coming from, because as I see an attempt across the country to reopen safely is the key, right? That was one of the struggles between the two opponents in the election, was everybody kept looking down on the Dems that they want to close things off. They wanted to close things off until we were able to reopen safely. And Mr. Trump did not follow, and the CDC set standards. whether it was in schools, whether it was in business or what, that if we are able to reopen and posture the businesses and restaurants and whatever in a safe way, we can reopen, right? But we are at risk if we reopen without a mask mandate, without social distancing, without plexiglass and whatever is necessary for a safe environment of testing and tracing. Well, the worst thing that can happen to a market, to economy, is to reopen immaturely and irresponsibly without the safety standards in place, and then, God forbid, we reclose again. You know what I'm saying? The air will come out of this recovery, whatever's happening. It's like when you pop the beer and you drink it, you know, and you don't feel like finishing, you close it again and you reopen it, all the air will be let out of that. One closure is one thing. A reopening in a safe environment is a good thing, but a second closure due to irresponsible reopening is inexcusable, and I believe will have detrimental effects on employment, on the economy, you know, and that's what I think.
Let's move over to Bitcoin. For me, as a technical analyst, I love this cryptocurrencies, because you have so much possibilities anyway. Even I told you this year is a technical analyst dream year, because in every market you have so much possibilities to outperform the market. But what the hell is going on in cryptocurrencies? We are heading to $16,000 in Bitcoin. Peter, institutional clients are coming into this market. CME futures, they reach new accounts, they reach new volumes. Why in this time is Bitcoin actually kidnapped by Wall Street? What I want to say, is it now something which is going on in the future and to be, we need to look serious on it? Or do you still think, Bitcoin, I don't know, it's still a bubble for me?
Okay, so, you know, I'm not a fan of it because I can't get my arms around it, but I will engage your question because I think what's going on is fascinating. You know, look, we've seen it in some, you know, if you remember a number of months ago, we saw a number of stocks just suddenly, you know, rumors out. Oh, Eastman Kodak. Remember when Mr. Trump, you know, gave them a contract to make viruses when they don't even make cameras well anymore, right? And we saw Robinhood and a number of stocks that went from $1 to $8 and then down to $2. We've seen these things before. For a week, where we saw potentially a news story that said that 1 billion bitcoins were stolen from a wallet, I was sitting there thinking, well, I would, you know, having not looked at the graph of where Bitcoin went in the subsequent days, I'm going like, you know, I felt validated that I think this Bitcoin thing is just a whole bunch of BS. However, it doesn't seem to faze people, right? And as we know, when people focus on something, as with the market, right, and they are looking for value, whether it's to get rich quick or looking for a long-term investment, they buy it with abandon, right? And we also know that there's, you know, there can be days where there's thin liquidity in these numbers, right? Look, Bitcoin, for people who endorse it, feel it's an incredibly wonderful flight to safety, gold and other commodities, right? It may, you know, perhaps now, and this just came to my mind, is let's say it's not, you know, a corrupt institution, and it's not a scam, and it's a real deal, and mm-hmm. we are now suddenly going into a world shutdown, which could be worse than the March shutdown, right? And people are still going to need transaction, right? It is basically a transaction marketplace. And it is a flight to safety for markets and investment, right? And in this way, then it seems attractive if that's where people's mindset is going, right? And so I think that's what we saw happen this week, right, in the rally. But let's go back once again, sir. We've seen Bitcoin over the last 2 years go to 20,000. And the move from 8 to 10 to 12 to 20 was a completely unpredictable move. And everyone, there were people who bought it at 20,000. And it's funny that when everybody starts hopping on the boat, you kind of know, us as technical people, that maybe this is the top, right? You know, it's like when I'm always fascinated when Warren Buffett or big hedge fund guys will announce that they've just taken a 6% stake in a company, you know, or whatever. And the stock, once they made that announcement, the stock goes up $3 on that news. And that is such a fascinating account of where the investment community can be or the retail community could be, because trust me, when they, by the time they announce it, they've already bought that position over the last 3 months, right? So I'm starting to get intrigued by Bitcoin, and I appreciate you ask the question. Whether it's a safe entity or not, I can't be that predictor. But I love the movement. I love the volatility, right? And I kind of think that's where we're going. It's an attempt to be a protective transactional currency in the midst of another global shutdown. What do you think about that?
I'm still a believer in of Bitcoin, and I was, since from the beginning, I was somebody who said there is some credibility in it, and it will start. It's still a junior child, so it will grow up, of course. And I love to be on the underdog position, to be honest, in that time. So nobody was looking to you, even Wall Street, even not, nobody liked Bitcoin before, but now everything turned completely different. So institutionals come over and ask about your expertise in cryptocurrencies, about blockchain. So there's a lot of things to go in the future. And I think especially, I mean, we are printing money as there's no tomorrow. This, we are reaching, of course, also situations where the credibility of our fiat system could also be not in danger, but there needs to be new creativity. So cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin could tend to be an alternative for our system. But this is something which we see in the future, of course.
You know what? My mind is spinning with the idea of it. You know, I'm sort of been always somebody who pushed back on it because I didn't, whether it was I couldn't understand it or couldn't wrap my hands around it. And when I don't understand something, I tend to just, you know, take a detour to the other side. But you're intriguing me with the conversation because, look, we've seen that your description of a young child, as it is a young child, still much left to go. We're not sure whether the child, what future the child has to bring, but we've seen it with other stocks that once the institutional investor starts getting intrigued by it, then you've got some fundamental support, right? We know where the bodies are starting to lie, right? So there's the two narratives. We've seen it go to 20,000, and what happened after that? It went down to 3, right? So there's still that potential narrative, but we could be in a new rules 2020, right? Once again, where the eyes have been opened of a whole new community of investors in this space, right? They could be looking at the market and going, wow, we've got an economy that's shutting down, a virus that's spiking, and do I buy the market up 30 times next year's earnings in so many of the NASDAQ names and the market? Is that where my value is going to be? Is there much room to get higher on that? Or should I, or could I sort of think, you know what, this looks intriguing, you know, and do my homework to know, which you've described to me, institutional investors and others are finding this thing as a new, attractive financial instrument. And that maybe once that happens, it's got future legs, there'll be less volatility on the downside, and there may be a firmer march towards a high level. So I think we should continue the conversation.
And just a small comparison, I mean, the Turkish lira devalued against the US dollar since the beginning of the year more than 50%. The Bitcoin valued or reached more value, more than 100% against the US dollar. So there are also people in other countries in the world who maybe suffer from huge devaluation of their currencies, which is much harder than actually or so volatile like a cryptocurrency, and they need also to hedge their transactions, like you said, sometimes, or to fulfill their transactions. So there's also an interest, I think, in sort of other corners in the world where Bitcoin definitely can be an important currency transaction system.
And maybe, guys, another thought, I think it's really interesting there. On the one side, the believers who think Bitcoin is the new safe haven, and on the other hand, the guys who are saying, you know, this is just the beginning, because governments want a digital dollar, a digital euro, and they want to watch everybody and every single transaction. So there are pros and cons for everything, and I think this is also very interesting.
One last thing I will say that I thought of it as you spoke, Manuel, is that the people who are fans, I can really relate it to the political environment in the United States here. We are 50-50, Trump, Biden, as far as people's preference, right? And if you speak to a Trumper, right, there's nothing you can tell him or her that would distract or would eat away at their confidence in Mr. Trump. You know, it's unbelievable. Normally, when within the political environment, people have often historically been swayed by an economic argument, a social argument, an international argument, right? And incredibly enough, the polarity of people's posturing politically in the United States is literally, if you are a Democrat, you don't want to hear anything from the other side because you don't believe it. And you know where my opinion lies. And if you're a Trumper, you know, it's amazing to think that 68 million people voted for Mr. Trump in the eyes of the fact that where we are as a nation relative to the virus, and yet still people believed in him. So Manuel just mentioned that. People who are Bitcoin believers are on board lock, stock, and barrel, and there's nothing you can say to sway them. And if you're a non-believer, you're just not involved. It's not like you're out there actively, in my opinion, shorting the Bitcoin or selling it. It's just that your attention is elsewhere. So that the people who are focusing on that as a safe haven are buyers. And when you've got buyers and not light on the sell side, you're going to see it the way it is. But I like it as a safe haven. It's starting to intrigue me.
And one point to Manuel's question or actually hypothesis that you already mentioned, which I liked. For my side, central banks are pushing forward into cryptocurrencies or into their own cryptocurrencies like the Fed, like Bank of Japan or the European Central Bank to get this interest. And something actually what is behind of that, central banks could directly print the money that they print, they could directly transact it to an individual, which now is made by the interbank market. So we all have a bank account at a bank. So there is still this intermediate that we have. And this is something in the future what I see as a pro and as a con in this deep dive of this function, how this system would change, because we would maybe lose our intermediates in some of transactions, in some of money transactions like banks.
So look, you know what we saw? We saw, in response to the pandemic, in response to fractured and fragile markets around the world, we've seen stimulus packages, and the Federal Reserve talked about all the different instruments and things, the tools in their box that they can use and have used, right? And you guys and we are throwing everything at these markets to support them the best way we can. And as the more you print money, right, the value of the money kind of does go down, whether we're willing to address that or not. And I think that could bode well for Bitcoin. Also, as you describe, that the idea of digital currency being something that the governments around the world are considering. Can you imagine if you got an endorsement of digital currency per se by individual governments, and perhaps they go out and do that on their own? This will be a marketplace that will just go through the roof.
Guys, I think there are so many layers. It was a very interesting topic. Thank you so much for today. Salah Edine Boumidi, head of markets at IG, and the legendary Peter Tuckman, the Einstein of Wall Street. Guys, thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you, guys.
Great day.
And thank you for watching. This was the IG Trading Talk. I'm Manuel Koch. For more information, go on IG.com. See you next time.